making waves.
Registration for the 2015 fall semester at Henry Ford College is now open. HFC's tuition remains unchanged for the rest of 2015. The college offers affordable tuition for students in more than 100 programs. Also, HFC guarantees that no classes will be canceled throughout the semester for students who have registered and paid their tuition. And HFC's tuition freeze guarantee means that any future tuition increase after a student's initial semester of enrollment will be refunded to the student upon graduation. The widest variety of classes and class times are available to early enrollees, and early enrollment allows more time for counseling, financial aid applications, and placement testing as needed. Fall semester classes begin on August 27th. To learn more, call 313-845-6403. That's 313-845-6403, or visit hfcc.edu.
You know, I often wondered what makes people tick. And then I signed up for classes at Henry Ford College and found out that studying human behavior can be a fascinating field to work in. Starting your education in this field can begin right here at Henry Ford College. For those who wish to pursue a career, advance a degree in a subject, or maybe just want to try something new, Henry Ford College has courses to fit a variety of needs. The social sciences include all the disciplines dedicated to the scientific understanding of human behavior. Social scientists study the patterns of the ways people think, act, and react as individuals and as members of society. Does this sound interesting to you? It did to me. The Henry Ford College Humanities and Social Science Division offers a wide variety of associate degree and certificate programs. To find out more, call the division office at 313-845-9625, or you can visit them on the web at hfcc.edu. The studying of human behavior, a fascinating field to work in and a career that can begin right here at Henry Ford College.
The views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded program do not necessarily represent those of Henry Ford College or WHFR. Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the program called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And today, my special guest is Laura. She is a gifted psychic medium and a practitioner of other spiritual modalities as well. I just want to say, how are you today, Laura?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you very much for doing it. I know it was kind of a last-minute thing, and I do appreciate you stepping in and helping me out. That's really great.
Awesome. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, well, psychic medium. How long have you been a practicing psychic?
Really, I have been a practicing, as in doing it for work, for probably about 3 years now. I was always gifted as a child. It was something that came very naturally to me. But as far as work goes, probably about 3 years.
Mm-hmm. So what age did you realize that there was something different about you, that you could perhaps see things or you knew of things that other people didn't know about?
Probably from the time I was very small. My mother could never just wrap my Christmas presents. She always had to box them. I always knew who was calling. I would have dreams that would kind of come, that would come true later. So probably about the time I was 3 or 4.
Wow, that's a long time. And you actually remember back then? Yeah?
Yeah, I was very verbal. I was very advanced in the vocabulary department. So I was not shy about talking about what I noticed and what I saw and felt.
Mm-hmm. Well, that must have been tougher on Christmas if you knew what were in the packages. I mean, that kind of spoils a surprise. But your mother managed to somehow hide those presents from you?
She did. You know, it just, I was always really too good at guessing.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was to the point where it was like, oh, okay, how did she know that? How did she know she was going to get the tea set? How did she know? And it was just, I remember one Christmas, I was about six, and I woke up on Christmas morning and I said, Mom, I'm going to get this tea set for Christmas. And I described it to her, what it looked like, what it felt like, you know, what it was going to be, where it was going to be. And I opened it up on Christmas morning.
Mm-hmm. And that was
it. She was like, oh.
Right. Well, I mean, it was something that was a surprise to her, right, as well?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, does that kind of run in your family, or are you the only one that seems to have that ability?
I think it runs in the family, but I'm the only one that works as a psychic and a medium, absolutely. It, you know, my mother is really good at looking at somebody and knowing if they're pregnant, which is kind of freaky, but true.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you know, my grandmother would tell me stories about just having, you know, dreams that came true, kind of. And so I think it does. It runs in families.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really think that's true of a lot of people if they paid attention more to their dreams, that could mm-hmm. kind of guide them in life to let them know what's possibly coming up for them or what's going on in certain situations. But I don't think people really pay attention to that. Is that something you find?
I find it, I agree, first of all, and I find it to be very true, because dreams are messages that we get while we're sleeping. You know, our subconscious gives us those messages, and I think they do and can affect our daily lives for good, absolutely. And then if you don't listen to them, maybe not so good.
Mm-hmm. Right. There again, if you ignore them, sometimes that might, you know, have poor results. But there again, I mean, everything's open to interpretation. Sometimes you have a dream and you really think it's going to be about this, and it turns out to be about something else, you know, or
absolutely,
maybe it involves
yeah.
different people that you previously didn't know, or whatever the case may be. But now, what other things do you do? I mean, you have dreams. What other things do you use to try to get information from the other side?
Well, what I do, I started out probably about, so it's 2015 now. I started out in 2010 really exploring different world religions. I took a religious studies course in college as an undergrad and really loved it, and learned how to read the tarot. And then that kind of expanded into practicing meditation, mindfulness, learning about the aura that surrounds us and what it is, how it works. And then really moving into expanding my mediumship abilities and learning how my gifts work.
Mm-hmm. So you understood it a little bit better?
Mm-hmm, I did. I tend to hear things in my head when I'm reading a client. I will sit down with them and explain that I'm going to, you know, give them a reading, that I'm going to try to connect with their higher guides and angels and my higher guides and angels to help them. And often I will hear information. I will also see information, but not as much. It depends on what they're trying to get through to me.
Mm-hmm.
Whether hearing or seeing or feeling will be the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will mention this at this time. You are blind. So, I mean, a lot of people might be taken aback by this. Have you ever had a client, you know, think that, wow, you know, what's this reading going to be like if it's someone that can't necessarily see?
What's really funny is that a lot of my clients don't realize I can't see until I pull out the cards and there's Braille.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're, you know, they do a double take and they're like, oh, well, how do you do that? Is the question I get all the time. And I think it lends itself to a level of credibility because I can't see their facial expressions to know if I'm right or wrong. I can't see their body language to know, oh, okay, am I right when I'm talking about their grandma, or are they giving me this look like you're crazy?
Mm-hmm. Right, but there
so
again,
when I'm right, it's a level of credibility.
Right, but there again, I mean, do you see people? I mean, if somebody's relative talking about something?
Mm-hmm. I do see people. I also see a lot of symbols. So the way that my clairvoyance is what it's called, when you can see the images in your mind's eye, I see a lot of symbols. So if somebody is into, say, sailing, I'm going to see sails or a sailboat in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But spirit can only give me the symbols that I'm familiar with. So if I've never been on a sailboat in real life, that's not going to mean anything to me. Therefore, they won't generally use it to pass along the message. They'll find some other way.
Mm-hmm.
They might show me the word in my crystal ball. They might put the word in my head where I say something like, oh, I hear the word sailboat. Does that mean anything to you?
Mm-hmm.
They have to get creative.
Right, right. Well, again, they have to be open themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what do you do? I mean, how do these images come to you? I mean, do you just, you know, I guess meditate a little bit before you do a reading, or how do you get ready for a reading, and how do some of these symbols just come to you?
I always ask before I sit down with a client that we are in the presence of their guides and my guides, their angels, however you want to word it, you know, their deity, for the highest and best good of my client, so that whatever comes through is meaningful and validating to them. Because I'm just the messenger. It's not my job to interpret their reading. It's my job to deliver the message. And, you know, do it with compassion. But it is, if I was going to interpret, they would never get out of my chair. I'd be there all day.
Yeah, well, could be a long session, huh?
It would be a long time. So the symbols come through, like I said, I can hear, feel, or see them. Like if I was going to read you, for example, just as an example, if you sat down at my table and I was going to read you, if I saw something in my mind's eye, it's almost like someone puts a picture inside my head. So, you know, if you close your eyes at night and you're laying in bed and you're falling asleep and you see, you know, you see something before you fall asleep kind of in your head, like you can see the picture of maybe the beach that you were on that day. That's kind of how it works. It's almost like I can see the image in my head.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to hear something, I might say something to you along the lines of, you know, I'm hearing this word. Does this mean anything to you? If I read a lot of health, I do a lot of health readings for people, and that is where I feel. That is where I'll physically feel what's going on with them. So I had someone the other day, as an example, who had a back problem, and I said, oh my gosh, I feel like I have this back pain. What's going on with your back? And she said, oh my gosh, yeah, I have a slipped disc or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll use whatever, spirit will use whatever way they can to get me to say that message. Even if it's weird or strange, they'll use whatever they can to get me to try to say it.
Mm-hmm. But that prompts you to say whatever comes into your head so that mm-hmm. your client will understand.
Absolutely, because like I said before, it's my job to give the message, not to interpret. And so I often ask people, do you understand? Does this make sense to you? That way I know that I'm on the right track and they know that I'm listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a prompt. It's almost like I would kind of say it's like a nudge, you know, hey, say this. Hey, pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you see things, do you see things in color? Are those part of your vision?
You know, yes. And that's very, very unique because in my non-psychic life, I physically do not have color vision. So when you say that I'm blind for your listeners, I am totally blind. I do not have color vision. I do not have shadow vision. I can see just a little bit of light out of one of my eyes. And so it's very unique that when I read someone, I will get colors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's the color as much as they'll put the word in my head or they'll give me an image. So, for example, the other day I read a client and I said, oh, you're going to paint your bedroom. And she said, yes. And I said, I see blue, because I had an image of a blue sky. And she said, oh, we just painted it blue yesterday.
Well, that's right on.
So it's very unique how they do that.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that by being blind that actually helps you perceive things differently or better, perhaps?
I think it's a learned skill. I'm one of those people that believes that everybody has an ability, that everybody has a psychic ability that if they choose to use it, they can. I think that for me, being blind has allowed me to shut out the world in a way, because I think that sometimes when people are looking at things, it's distracting. I'm sure you can probably relate to that.
Yes. No, I know exactly what you mean. And it's like you said earlier, I mean, if you are looking at somebody and they're giving you a weird face after you've said something, that might distract you or any reader, you know, if they think, well, you know, maybe I'm really wrong or maybe I've upset this person, whatever. But in your case, you don't have that. So I think that works to your advantage in some cases.
It does. Now, some people are harder reads than others. You know, you mentioned the facial expressions. Some people, you can hear it in the tone of their voice. Some people you're right on, but they're not that emotional person. So you have to just keep going because I can't look at their face. So sometimes they might say something like, well, yeah, that makes sense, but nothing else. And so I'm sitting there going, okay, was it right? Okay, it doesn't matter if it's right. I'm just here to give the message. And you just have to trust what you get.
Real briefly, I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And my special guest today is Laura. She is a gifted psychic medium and a practitioner of other spiritual modalities. Right now, we're talking about being a psychic. Now, getting back to when you give a reading with the tarot cards, do you have your client, you know, pick out the cards and set them down? How do you go about your tarot card reading?
Well, tarot, I really love because it sometimes can help you to expand the story. With my clients, I will often hand them the deck and tell them, go ahead and shuffle any old way that you want, because my cards are very jumpy, and so sometimes they will literally, two or three of them will just kind of fly out of the deck, and my clients are always, you know, oh, I'm so sorry, and it's like, no, it's okay. So I often have them shuffle.
And then they pick a few cards? I mean, do you use a certain pattern or anything like that?
I let them usually shuffle, and then I usually pick the cards. I'll just kind of pull off the top of the deck, and what comes out comes out. Now, if something happens to fall out, I leave it, because I have my belief is that if it fell out, it obviously is needed, and we're going to look at it.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, it may be accidental, quote and unquote, but actually it might be relevant to that person at that time. And you find that to be true, and you just go with it? I mean, if two or three fall out, you just read those as well?
I do, yes. And I usually read those first.
And has it turned out that it was something that maybe was on the person's mind, they didn't really want to mention it, or how does that work, or how has that worked?
It has worked in many different ways over many different readings. Sometimes what falls out is just... like, for example, I did a reading last week, and a card fell out that related to money. And so the first thing I said to my client was, oh, you're getting a new job. And she said, yes, I am. I'm getting a new job. And so then I was able to sort of expound upon that for her. Other times what falls out is a card that relates to health or transportation. So it really depends on the person.
Now, if something falls out about health, have you surprised people by reading that card and telling them that, you know, you might want to check out a certain area of your body, or there might be a problem further on down the road with parts of their body or illness or something like that?
Yes. So the way that I do health readings is that I'm able to see the energy field that surrounds people again. And it's like, I see it in my mind's eye, like we talked about before. And I will often just include that in my readings for people and talk about their health. And, you know, I always make the disclaimer, I'm not a doctor. The advice I may give you or my opinions are just that. Always seek medical help and go to the professionals if that's what you need to do. But I often will read about people's health, and it is surprising. I've told people they were pregnant before they told their families. I have told people that they have certain, like, I've suggested to people, oh, I feel like you have some problems with your knees, or or you may have some food allergies. And more often than not, it surprises me how right I am, because I'm my biggest skeptic.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you do a reading, though, and you tell people that, you know, is there something about, like you said, knees, maybe have they ever said, well, no, not right now, but you go ahead and say that maybe you should get that checked out or anything like that?
Oh, that has happened. I get no all the time, and I love it because it keeps me humble, and it reminds me that, you know, if ever a psychic tells you, oh, I'm right 100% of the time, you should go running the other direction, because nobody is right 100% of the time. I have had people tell me, oh, no, I don't have a problem with my knees. And then I say something like, okay, well, you know, maybe this is something for your future, or just be mindful of that part of your body. Be careful. I know is not a bad thing when it comes to getting readings and when I've read people.
Mm-hmm. Right. But there again, also when you perhaps get some information that might be construed as bad or dangerous, do you let the person know? I mean, this is something I always ask every medium that I interview. How do you handle situations like that where you might be getting something that might be considered a very bad situation? How do you handle that?
It depends on the situation. I had wonderful teachers, and I still have wonderful teachers in my spiritual practices, where I work when I'm not in graduate school studying over at Mama Tracy, Inc. She has been a wonderful, Tracy herself has been a wonderful teacher of how to give information with tact, because you can't, and I will never say to somebody, oh, you're going to die. Because that's, you know, we're all going to die. We all have to,
right,
we live,
yes,
we die. But if, say, for example, someone comes to me and they have health concerns, and I feel like they may have cancer or they may be at risk for something like that, I will suggest, okay, maybe it's time that you get some blood work just to check out your levels, make sure everything's okay. I'm a little concerned about cancer. I will never say to somebody, oh, this is what you have.
Mm-hmm.
I may say something like, I feel like this may be a concern in the future, or you might want to get this looked at. But it's about being tactful, because if you say something to someone in a way that is, could be construed as harmful, you could affect them for a very long time.
Right. Well, you may freak somebody out, and then mm-hmm. that's all they're worried about is, you know, oh man, I'm going
right.
to die of cancer or something. And that might not be the case. Again, if you catch that early, sometimes you can, you know, mm-hmm. get rid of it or whatever the case may be. So I guess they have to be open-minded, but again, it depends on the person.
Right. It does. And sometimes, you know, cancer is an astrological sign as well. And I have mm-hmm. had people where I've said, okay, I see the word cancer for you. Are you concerned about that? And they'll say no. And then I'll say, well, wait, what sign are you? And they'll tell me, oh, I'm a Cancer. And it's like, mm-hmm. well, duh.
Yeah, right. Right.
Okay.
I mean, something you may not expect, you know, but yes.
Yep.
I mean, it may not necessarily be a bad thing then.
Exactly.
Obviously, right. Now, what have you done as far as training? How long have you trained, and what's some of the different training you've gone through?
I have been studying metaphysical, you know, work and spiritual modalities and different things like that for probably about 5 or 6 years. I have gone through a lot of self-study, it's very ironic because I've gone through a lot of self-study. Some people go through all those, you know, fancy classes, and they're going to New York and London, and they're studying with the famous mediums. And mine was such a gift that came and could not be disputed. It wasn't like I wanted to open up my mediumship.
Mm-hmm.
It just was there. So it was like, you don't have a choice. I mean,
right.
I could have said no. You know, you always have that choice.
Right.
But I knew that this was something that I was going to do with my life. From the time I was little, it was just a matter of getting the right people in the right places. So I've done a lot of self-study. I read a lot of books. And then also I've been blessed, like I said, to work and to study with Tracy over at Mama Tracy Inc. and the readers there, because not everybody is ethical, and finding that good mentor, having good mentors, is really important. I have a personal mentor of mine who has gone through the spiritualist churches in Lilydale, New York, who I work with occasionally. I have my person that taught me how to read tarot and introduced me to my mediumship safely was a huge mentor for me. So lots of self-study, lots of different studying religions, learning about what do other people believe about death, because Western culture believes one thing, but Eastern culture, it's entirely different.
Mm-hmm. Right, just depending on the person, and again, culture, a lot of ingredients go into what a person believes. Now, what else have you done? I mean, I know you've done the tarot cards, but what other modalities do you kind of specialize in?
Well, you're right. I do the tarot cards. I also do mediumship. I do psychometry, which is where I can pick up an object of somebody's and read the energy off that object. I also do a lot of health readings, just basic clairvoyant, your future possibilities. I do Reiki as well, which is a Japanese form of energy work, similar to, I'm trying to think of another similar to here, but it's kind of like laying on of hands. You would kind of equate it to praying and laying on of hands in some aspects, but it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to help balance out a person's energy centers in the body, and it's very non-invasive. There's no side effects, anything like that. I'm also a certified massage therapist.
Wow, you have really covered just a lot of different stuff. Yes, just about everything. I mean that, you know, and then some. Also, I think, didn't you say that you like to work with children too?
I do. I love working with children. One of the things that I love doing as a reader is working with children. Of course, parental permission has to be granted. I don't work with anybody that's under 16 without a parent present.
Mm-hmm.
But I love working with children, especially children who may be gifted or sensitive, as they're called these days,
mm-hmm.
who may have their own gifts, as I did, and struggle. And it can be a struggle, because children don't always know how to express what's happening. They just know, oh, I'm picking up my neighbor's emotions, or why can I tell that my teacher is lying? You know, what's going on? Why do I see colors around people?
Mm-hmm. How often do you work with children?
It really depends. I usually kind of get references through word of mouth with as far as children go, because you know, they're children, and, mm-hmm. and so parents are cautious, as they should be, because not everybody should be working with kids. Some people are better with adults.
Right. Well, again,
probably a couple, once or twice a month.
Sometimes, too, what I was going to say is families don't always react well if they don't understand what's going on. But obviously,
exactly.
If parents are bringing the children to you, they are at least open to working with their child in developing their gifts. And that has happened to you?
It has. A good friend of mine, her daughter actually started coming to me when she was about 12, because they were having so many problems. She was having anxiety. She was having panic attacks. And often what I tell parents is that, okay, your child is gifted, because every child is special, right? We all want to think that our kids are special, and they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I will often tell parents that your child has to be a child first. And then, if they want to embrace their gifts when they're older and they're able to understand what those are and how they work, that's great. But my first piece of advice to most parents is let your kid be a kid.
Mm-hmm.
We can name it. We could label it if you want to. But the most important thing is to believe your child and let your child be a kid, because too many parents are like, oh, my child is gifted. This is great.
Right.
Then
all of a sudden they...
Because sometimes the people that I see are not all rainbows and roses.
Right. Well, also sometimes the parents get carried away and start putting them in all types of specialty camps and things like
yep.
that. And it's like you said, let a kid be a kid. I think that's one of the things that's lost in today's society. You know, the parents really want to push the kids into a specialty area. And, you know, it's just let the kids grow up. Let them decide what they want to do.
Right. I worked with another client recently who her son is having some difficulties. And I said, listen, he doesn't have to accept the gift. It's not like he's going to get repercussions on a karmic level or from God or whomever if he doesn't become a medium. He doesn't have to do it.
Right. There is such a thing as free will, right?
Yes. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, if you give a reading and you tell people that, you know, this is the possibility that might happen, it may not happen due to the fact that that person decides, well, you know what, I don't really want that. Or if you may say, well, you're going to be getting a job promotion and they're thinking, no, I don't really want to do that, or whatever the case may be, that may negate whatever you tell them. Have people come back and told you that?
Have people told me that they didn't want to?
Well, that they, you suggested they're going to do this, but they decided not to because they were afraid of the stress or whatever the case may be. Have you had any feedback like that?
Yeah, people have. And actually, I've had that happen in my own readings because I have, you know, I have some readers that I go and see, and they've told me certain things, and I've thought, no, that's not how I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Free will is a very powerful thing.
Right. So you do use other readers. You don't try to read yourself at all.
I do read myself, which is somewhat rare, because a lot of the readers I know say, oh, well, I can't read myself. But I didn't have anyone to practice on when I first started learning, and so I had to get really honest with myself really quickly and learn to read myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great free self-improvement.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you really honest with yourself? Because I think that's the hard thing to do when you try to read yourself.
I would say 95% of the time, yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's always those little moments where we're like, oh, no,
yeah.
that's not how it's going to go.
Right. This is going to happen, or that's going to happen, or whatever. I mean,
right.
You want certain, you know, outcomes or whatever, and we're all humans, and of course, you desire certain things, but that does happen. Now, when you give a reading, you said that you try to clear your mind, ask spirit to guide you. Is there anything else that you might do?
I always call in their guides, my guides, ask for protection, just that the information that I give is validating, that it makes sense to my clients, and that we are surrounded basically in a bubble of safety and positivity, because sometimes people come in and they're in a really bad headspace. They lost their dog, they wrecked their car, their children aren't speaking to them, and their mother died all in 6 months. And so sometimes you just need to be that person's listening ear, and you need to be that positivity and give them that hope.
Mm-hmm.
Find something that can help them.
Mm-hmm. But what
if you're in a positive space?
What if you're not receiving that kind of information, and perhaps you see things as getting even worse? How do you handle something like that?
I have had readings where people have come in and said, oh, my dog died, my parents died, my house was foreclosed on, I lost my car, my husband's divorcing me. And at that point, I try to get the information that I can for them. And if it's, I try to get the positive. I try to find the positive, try to help them to see the bigger picture, I want to say. Because we all go through stuff in life. Everybody has periods in life where nothing is going the way we want it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say that, oh, we just have to think happy thoughts, right? You can't be that trite, but you can help them to maybe get out of the negative self-talk of, oh, this is my fault. What did I do wrong? Why am I being punished? And so I try to tell them and what I see, absolutely, with honesty. I will always be honest about what I see. But I also try to find something positive so that when they leave, they don't feel as bad as when they sat down.
Mm-hmm. Once again, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Laura. She is a gifted psychic medium and practitioner of other spiritual modalities as well. And we're talking about a lot of different things right now. Now, what do you try to do when a person comes to you? Do you try to, I don't know, maybe open up as soon as possible to kind of prove that you know what you're talking about? Or do you kind of ease into a reading? What do you do?
We have a saying when I'm working at the shop, at Tracy's shop, and that is no filter. I am not one of those readers that is going to sugarcoat things. I will be compassionate. I will be kind. I will be friendly. I will be understanding and empathetic. But if the first thing I see is, okay, you are in debt and you need to start saving your money and being more responsible, I'm going to tell you. But I'm not going to say, oh, you loser, you suck, you're in debt. I might say something like, you know, I see that you're having money troubles and I see a lot of debt, and I'm going to suggest that you think about X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
I do try to open up as soon as possible, but I don't look at it as having to prove anything to anyone.
Mm-hmm. You're not trying to impress anybody.
No, mm-hmm. No. I am simply giving the messages. If I get into a space where I have to impress somebody, that means my ego needs to be fed. And that's never a good thing when you're reading somebody. You have to put your own ego aside, because I've read people who've had affairs. I've read people who had affairs who, you know, raked their husband or wife for everything they're worth financially. And it's not my place to judge
mm-hmm.
or prove anything.
Right. But you do mention that to people. I mean, you have no qualms about, I don't know, maybe it's just something you received. They weren't even asking about affairs or whatever, but you will just go ahead if that's something you receive. Again, no filters being used. You just go ahead and mention that to them.
I will say it in a way that's tactful and respectful. I like I said, I may say something along, okay, I see marital troubles. I'm feeling like there may have been some affairs or some issues with fidelity in the marriage. Do you understand? And sometimes I won't even say, do you understand? Because I'll know that they understand. And I'll be like, okay, we're going to keep going with this topic. But I try to be tactful, but I'm a blunt person in life when I'm not behind the table reading.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, you, again, try to be compassionate. I'm sure it's not always easy to do. I mean, do you ever get tempted to say, you know, wow, you know, this is really, you have a lot of trouble. You need to get some things straightened out here.
Yes. There are days when, I think like everybody has those days, when you just are like, okay, I don't want to hear about your problems. What about my problems?
Yeah.
But doing this work, you have to be selfless
mm-hmm.
because it's not your job to judge them. It's not your job to prove anything to them. It's your job to read them, deliver the messages, be compassionate. And there have been times where I've read people and thought, oh my God, these people are screwed up. But we're all screwed up at the
mm-hmm.
end of the day.
Right. To one degree or another, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think all families are dysfunctional to one degree or another. Again, nobody's perfect. If they were perfect,
right,
they wouldn't be here, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Do you do any past life readings, or do you get any information about that at all with people?
I do actually do past life regression. I'm glad you asked. I forgot to kind of mention it before when we were talking. I do past life readings for people where I will look at the cards. I'll look at their energy. I may ask my guides, okay, where have they been? Who have they been? I actually just did a regression for a woman the other day so she could kind of go back and work on some issues that she's been having. I also do something that's unique among mediums, is that I'm very much able to connect with people who have just died.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking a month, a week, 2 weeks. That's somewhat unusual for most mediums. They tend to have a hard time with people who have recently died, but I never have.
So, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's 6 years or 6 days. Sometimes you can still contact that person, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. I did a reading recently for a woman who lost somebody 4 days before she walked in and sat down at my table.
Mm-hmm.
And it is unusual. I have actually asked several people, and they said, oh, that's a little bit unusual. Most people have a hard time with that. I don't know why. I'm not saying every time is perfect, right? You know, understand. But as a general rule, I very much connect with spirits who have just passed away. I'm not sure why. I would love to know why, but they haven't told me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably something you don't really need to know, correct?
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to go with yes. I'm not always the most patient when it comes to me, though, so I always want to know. You know, we're our own worst enemy sometimes.
Right. Right. Again, it's hard working with yourself. But do you find the past life regression to be very effective in helping people?
I do find it to be really effective. Now, as far as past life regression goes, I think sometimes it's almost as effective as a standard reading, partially because I'm guiding the client into a very relaxed state of meditation, and I'm walking them through this specific way that I get them to go back, and then I let their mind do the walking and the talking, as it were. I may ask open-ended questions like, tell me what you're wearing, tell me, but I don't say anything along the lines of, was your name, you know, Joseph or Mary?
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually ask leading questions. I ask very open-ended questions, and it has proved to be very effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wouldn't say anything that, well, that sounds like England back in the 1800s. You wouldn't go suggest anything like that, because that would, again, you know, kind
that
of affect,
leave them. Yeah,
yeah,
no.
Affect the reading or the past life regression. So, and again, how long do those generally last?
The ones that I do generally last about 45 minutes when it's all said and done, because you want that client relaxed on the table. You let them go back. You let them have their experience, as it were. You bring them out slowly, and you give them some time to tell you what they saw.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually tell them what I see until they've told me, so that they can't then be like, oh, okay, so we were there together. It's like, no.
Right.
I'm a facilitator at that point, and mm-hmm. they're the one that's going on the journey.
Right. So when you're going through this with them, do you see some of the things they do as far as, you know, some of the experiences they've had in past lives?
Sometimes I will get snippets of information, and I literally mean like pieces, where I may see them for a second, and just to give me an idea of where they are, if I can move forward with them in the meditation process. But I don't see everything that they see.
Mm-hmm. Right. Again, that's not really your job. It's their job to kind of go where they need to go. Do you just open it up? Do you try to guide them to a certain lifetime, or do you just open it up and go to the lifetime that might be most beneficial for them to relive, so they can go through a few problems that they're currently going through in this lifetime?
I guide them to just a space where they can walk through a door, so to speak, and into whatever time that they need to go to resolve the issue that is at hand, or just to see what they need to see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes you can guide a client to a certain lifetime. You could say, okay, I want you to go back to your lifetime where you had a fear of drowning.
Mm-hmm.
But more often than not, I don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm sure there are clients, though, that come to you and say, you know, I do have this phobia or whatever, or I can't seem to do this. Can you take me back to that lifetime or a lifetime that might give me some information on why I'm having problems in this lifetime?
Yes, and they can do that, and they have done that with me. There's no guarantee, though. Just like when I do a mediumship reading for somebody, I tell them, this is not AT&T. This is not 1-800-DIAL-UP-THE-DEAD. There's no guarantee who you're going to talk to, and there's no guarantee that you're going to actually get to the specific lifetime that you're looking to go to. You may find the answer, but it might not be exactly how you think it's going to come across.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, too, I think people have to be open that it might be another lifetime that maybe, you know, was something that happened before the lifetime that might affect them this lifetime. They just have to be open that wherever they go, wherever they end up, that is the life that they're supposed to relive at that time. Is that what you tell people?
That's about the gist of it. Yeah, you got that right.
Mm-hmm. Now, generally, when you take people into past life regressions, do you have them go downstairs, or do you try to have them go out through the top of their head? What's your general way that you take people
down? I tend to have them go downstairs because that going down is also kind of an easier way. Like you're rooting into the earth, you're relaxing, you're letting your body go into a deep place. It sometimes depends on the person, though. I have some people where I've had a client or two where they would rather go up, and so we've done it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you check with the person? Do you ask them, do you prefer to go down, up, what's more relaxing, anything like that?
No, I usually will just ask them to tell me of somewhere that they feel safe and relaxed, and I will use that in the imagery. So some people might love a beach. Other people might like the woods. Some mm-hmm. people might like a cave. Other people may like the stars and the planets. It just really depends.
Mm-hmm. So you just ask them where their happy place is, and that's where you try mm-hmm. to take them, right?
Yes.
By whatever means. Well, that's interesting because, I mean, I know some people, like you said, they like the beach. Maybe they feel more relaxed at the beach. You have to take them there and, you know, go from there, and that's where they feel most relaxed and are more open to any type of past life regression experiences, things like that. Do you find that to be true?
I do find that to be true, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you work with children, have you ever done any past life regressions with them at all, anything like that, and would they understand that?
I have not yet done a past life regression with a child. Mm-hmm. I think children are very unique because there are plenty of documented stories of young children being able to prove where they were in a previous life or who they were. And I would love to do past life regressions with kids. But again, you have to involve the parents, especially when you're working with minors.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I guess there's a legal aspect, but also you don't want to scare the child or the parents as well, right?
Exactly. Because sometimes what we see is not, like I said previously, rainbows and roses. You may see, oh, okay, I was drowned by my husband in a previous life, so this is why I'm terrified of water.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want a 10-year-old seeing that because they're not going to understand.
Right. Or the fact that maybe they feel that, you know, whatever they're seeing, that, you know, somehow that person is with them in this lifetime, because many of us, you know, seem to come back with a lot of the same souls, you know, in different lifetimes, and they may not realize what's really going on there, that their father in that lifetime, the former lifetime, might be their mother this lifetime. Who knows?
Right. That can be very confusing, even for adults.
Yes. I think I just confused myself. So that's, that's pretty easy to do, though. But, I mean, I think that, you know, it's a lot of information for people to take in, and I think they have to be open to receive that. Is that something you find to be true?
I do. I do find that to be true. Open-mindedness is a great quality to have, no matter what you're doing. And the more open-minded you can be, as a general rule, I find that to be better in the long run, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Right. So would you describe yourself as a fairly calm person? I mean, you don't really get upset a whole lot?
I would describe myself as a fairly calm person. I worry more than I should. but I don't get upset or angry per se unless it's something really big. Now, I mean, we're human, right? So I'm going to have days where that's not true. But as a general rule, it takes a lot to upset me, a lot to get me really angry.
Mm-hmm. Right. Again, we're only human. Now, have you ever got to the point where you might be just out at a restaurant or anything like that, and you're picking something up about maybe a person that is waiting on you or anything like that? And if so, would you say something to that person if you're receiving some kind of information?
I have been in that position before. What I generally do is, if it's absolutely necessary, if my guides will not shut up and I can't concentrate, if I just, you know, if my waitress is pouring me my iced tea and I keep hearing, tell her about her father, tell her about her father, I may ask her if that's okay, but I do not just pull a a reading out of my hat and just start reading people at random, because you don't know who that person is, you don't know what they believe, and quite honestly, it can be kind of rude and intrusive if you're not expecting it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you just don't blurt something out.
No. I don't, and it would take a lot to get me to actually ask my waitress, for example, hey, you know, I'm a psychic medium, could I give you a message? That it would, they'd have to move a lot in the spirit end to get me to do it, because I really have a very firm rule and boundary that when I'm not on, I'm not on. When I'm not working as a psychic medium, I turn it way down, because it can drive you crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was going to ask too, is the fact that, you know, is that something that's with you 24/7, 365, and that you can't really turn it off, but again, what you're saying is you can kind of lessen it, and it doesn't really affect your other hours during the day when you're not really working, so you can function as a human being, but you feel that that is the case with you. You can dial it down a little bit?
I actually can dial it down a lot, and that was because my very first teacher that I had before I worked at Mama Tracy's was very adamant about teaching me how to control that. Because it can drive you to the point of anxiety, of panic attacks, of not wanting to leave your house. And he was very adamant, you will learn how to control this, because this will not control your life.
Mm-hmm.
It can if you don't, it can control you if you're not aware of how to turn it down, turn it off. I mean, it can give you headaches, you can become fatigued, you can literally not want to leave your house, you can lose sleep. And for me, I'm pretty busy outside of doing this work. I can't afford to do that, so I turn it way down. I just have a rule that, okay, Spirit, when I'm done doing my work, I'm going to turn it down, and if you need to get my attention, do so. But otherwise, like when I'm out with my best friend, I don't give her messages.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give my family messages. I don't give the guy at the ice cream shop a reading from his dead grandmother.
Yeah.
Because I have a life.
Right. Well, again, like you said earlier, they may not be willing to receive it. They don't want to hear about it. Maybe it is
right. Something
that's very personal to them, very intrusive, that they would really consider it an insult for you to say anything because it's none of your business.
Right. Now, has it slipped out before? Absolutely. You know, I've been in positions where I've said something and people will say, oh, how did you know that was my father's name, or something along those lines? And then I have to say, oh, I'm really sorry. You know, I pick up that information. I didn't mean to intrude. But as a general rule, 98% of the time, it's turned down when mm-hmm. it's not turned on for work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would imagine, though, that there are those times when you really just can't seem to resist. You feel very strongly that whatever message you're receiving, that person has to know. And do you try to inform them of that?
I will do it in a roundabout way. So if I'm talking to a friend and she's talking about how devastated she's been lately because she's just having a rough time, and I feel like maybe her dead aunt or her dead grandmother is telling her that it's going to be okay, I'll say something along the lines of, you know what, I can't tell you how, but I know it's going to be okay, and I'm sure that your family is supporting you and everything's going to be fine. You don't have to go into, oh, I'm a psychic medium and here's what I have for you. Sometimes
right.
it's just being human and giving that person the compassion and the time that they deserve.
Mm-hmm. Do you have friends and family that come to you, though, in times of trouble and want to ascertain certain information?
I do. My family is off limits. I send my family to people that I trust, but I do not read my family unless it is an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to know. They don't need to know everything about my life, and I really don't need to know everything about their lives. And my friends know that they can come to me, and they also know that if I can't read them or I don't feel like I can give them an objective point of view, I'll send them to someone I trust.
Right. There again, I would imagine sometimes emotions get in the way, and you want things to turn out good for your friends or family, and that might cloud your judgment. So I think that's a good thing that you send them to somebody else that can be more, you know, open and mm-hmm. A little more concise on what's really going on, whereas you might filter yours with emotion.
Right, exactly. And we do. Nobody from me to John Holland to John Edward is perfect. And sometimes we filter it with our own emotions and we don't realize we're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Right. There again, it's something that you have to go through and just make sure that you are watching yourself and shutting yourself down. And is that hard to do?
It can be, especially if you're in a situation where you think to yourself, okay, if I was her, I would do it this way. But again, that's the ego talking, right? You, if I'm reading somebody, I can't say, well, this is what you should do. Because mm-hmm. then I'm becoming involved in my own emotions. Well, this is what I would do, so this is what she would do. You have to lay out the options. And sometimes it's hard because you look at someone and you say, why would you do that? Why would you be with this person when they're abusing you? But you have to look at it from a higher vantage point and be objective.
Right. Well, again, it might be something that person has to go through in order to learn whatever it is they have to learn, you know, here on
right.
Earth. How many hours a week do you do this, though? I mean, is it just like 5 days a week, or what's the time frame?
I usually do this about 15 hours a week or so.
Okay.
And it's less when I'm a full-time graduate student, but it's still something I make time for.
Mm-hmm. So once you spend several hours giving readings, do you feel kind of worn out and you have to rest, or does that revitalize you?
Depends on the day. Most of the time it is very revitalizing, but it also makes you very, for me, it makes me hungry.
Oh, really?
So I physically, it's almost like working out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh my
right.
God, I'm starving, you know? So it's often more that it makes you hungry. It makes you have to replenish your energy, but it is generally revitalizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like you have to go and take a nap somewhere after you do that.
Right, no.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good
thing.
Sometimes
naps are good. I mean, I like naps, but.
Mm-hmm. Right, but it's not, you know, again, I've talked to people and, you know, everybody's different. Some people are really drained and they have to go lie down and, you know, replenish themselves. And like you said, other people are, like yourself, primarily they're rejuvenated. You know, they
mm-hmm.
just want to keep going. You know, they are so filled with energy, you know, and they love to help
yes.
people and work with people. And that really revitalizes them.
Yes, absolutely. That would be me.
Okay. So that does affect you as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, how can people get in touch with you or see you? Do you have any, like, telephone numbers, websites, anything like that?
I am actually starting a podcast of my own in the next week. It will be through Blog Talk Radio, and they can subscribe to that podcast. It's called Intuitive Inspiration. They can also find me at Mama Tracy, Inc. when I am not in grad school. And they can also find me through email, which is something that we can put in the show notes, or I can just kind of give an address.
You can give it out, telephone numbers, addresses, whatever you want.
People can email me at sacredpathways, so sacredpathways, plural, at icloud.com to set up a personal reading. If you have questions, if you'd like to connect on that level, I am more than happy to do that. And then again, I'm starting that podcast, Intuitive Inspiration, on Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, is that
those are some great ways to contact me. I also can be found on Twitter at Sacred Intuition.
Okay, so those are several ways to get in touch with you. Did you want to give the phone number to Mama Tracy's at all? Do you have that?
Absolutely, absolutely. So Mama Tracy's is located right on Van Born Road, just east of Telegraph in Dearborn. And her phone number is 734-626-5436. And she is open 7 days a week. And it's a wonderful place to go, to grow, to learn, and just to, you know, maybe see what a place like that is all about. It's not all woo-woo, as some people think. We've got a little bit of everything for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And after graduate school, do you plan to continue on with this? This is not something that's going to stop after you get through school, right?
Oh, no. This will be something I do for the rest of my life, and I'm very grateful and blessed to be doing this work. And it can only grow and get better as I grow and get better.
Mm-hmm. Well, Laura, thank you very much for being on this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I really do appreciate it. Very interesting. And once again, thank you for doing the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, once again, I do want to thank my guest for this month's edition of Metaphysically Speaking, Laura. She is a gifted psychic medium, and she does other spiritual modalities as well. I thought it was very interesting. I don't really want to harp on this too much, but, you know, she is blind, and I thought that was very intriguing when I first talked to her and found that out, and the fact that she's able to, you know, see things and have visions and really help people. I think that's really fantastic and very, very interesting. I also want to thank my producer, Brandon McKay, for helping me out with this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I always appreciate his fine help. I couldn't do it without him, so I really appreciate all his work. And be sure to join me for another edition of Metaphysically Speaking on the third Tuesday of next month. With all that being said, I just want to say, have a great day, everybody.
You're listening to WHFR. Guys and dolls out there, this is Daddy G, and you're at the Mold Shop with Daddy G. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the Mold Shop with me, where the jukebox is playing and the kids are dancing. And we're going back right now to the 50s.
Hurt.